You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
I am joined by Dr. Maria Colombo in the studio. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Now, you are here to chat about the upcoming Thirst for Knowledge talk at Umbrellos, during which you'll be delving into Victorian philanthropist. I'm so bad at saying that
word.
Such a hard word. Angela, is it Burdette Coutts?
Burdette Coutts.
Yeah, she's been described as one of the most outspoken and dedicated philanthropists of her time, high ranking there, and you're exploring her life through the making of a recent stage production about her legacy. What drew you to Angela?
That's such a great question. So it was not last year, but the year before, the production company that I've co-created with Bronwyn Wallace, Late Bloomers, we did a show called Baroness. Mm-hmm. Now, originally, actually, we had that title for a different reason. We were both, like, single and childless, and we thought, hey, let's put on a show about that. But it just wasn't resonating with us. It didn't feel right for a host of reasons. And actually, Bronwyn was reading a Charles Dickens novel and saw, like, a very small footnote about Angela Burdette Coutts, and so started researching it and called me and said, what if we did the show about the first woman ever to become a baroness in her own right?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good a good starting point, yeah. Where did your love of theatre begin? Where did it blossom from?
Oh, well, so I was a dancer originally. I grew up in Dunedin and did a lot of dance. And then it was actually through the Capping Show a lot of ways. Yeah, I was the choreographer for the Capping Show and then started writing some comedy and then got into improv through there and then just started doing theatre. Wow. And then COVID happened and I was kind of flung back to Dunedin and I thought, oh, well, might as well make some art.
Yeah, yeah. And you're also a doctor of psychology.
Yeah.
So you're wearing many hats.
Too many.
And this one, I mean, it's history as well. Did you always have a love of history and historical figures?
No. So Bronwyn and I, when we do art together, we've got this beautiful melange. I love history. She is, though, an avid reader. Like, she is really the historical kind of workhorse of our team. So she can read. We both got the novel about Angela Burdette Coutts because there's only like one or two about her.
Yeah.
And I was like on chapter two and she was like, I'm done. And I've read a second one. I was like,
oh, wow.
Cool. So yeah, but I do love more and more love how history is informing kind of all the things we do today.
Yeah.
And it's definitely an important thing to keep on going back to because I think we're quite quick to move on from it.
Yeah.
But it usually is something we've already done wrong before.
Exactly, exactly. There's a reason we write it down.
Exactly.
So the description of the show mentions how artists shape complex histories into performance without simplifying those figures down and reducing them in any way. Without kind of spoiling the talk, obviously, we're giving a preview, not spoiling it all. Can you talk a little bit about that idea?
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, when you accolade a woman from the 1800s, a white, wealthy woman from the 1800s, look, she is not a perfect figure. But something that Bron and I have always thought about in the art that we make is that we often hold women to this unrealistically high standard of how good we want them to be in order to be worthy historical figures. And so throughout the show, we were kind of playing with this idea of, yeah, there's things about her. She's a woman of her time, right? She had lots of philanthropic activity. She also was incredibly religious and incredibly moralistic in a lot of ways. You know, she was no sort of like social change goddess. So kind of playing with those themes, but how do we accolade what she did do?
Yeah.
And still hold a candle to the things that she didn't do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're researching someone like this and then making their life into performance, do you feel like you have a weird closeness to her? Like, do you feel like you know her in a way?
I am 100%. Actually, we took a show to Adelaide, not the show, and she had funded a church there.
Oh,
and
true.
So Bron and I, not super religious people, but very tattooed women, rock up to this church. There's like a service going on, and we were like, oh, we can't go in here. But we're like, no, it's our Angela. And then we were saying, oh, we know there's a portrait of Angela here. Mm. And they were like, this one? And it was just kind of behind these two administrated men in the church. And I burst into tears. And he was like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, we feel so attached to her. I'm going to the UK later this year and kind of low-key to see her gravesites. which is really
but
weird.
It's what happens when you play a character, like when you're playing character, or you're, you know, doing a production of someone's life, like you live and breathe it for a long time.
Yeah, totally. My partner for Christmas got me these like limited edition books with his own like two versions of them of stories of her, and so romantic.
Yeah, that is. It probably was like, I've jackpot.
He's like, nailed this.
Yeah, couldn't do better than this. Now, you talk about the process of devising. Can you speak a little bit about what that's been like on this on the stage production?
Yeah, it's so funny. I've been thinking about this a lot. We've got different words for kind of the same activity. So in my academic life, I do a lot of qualitative research. So interviewing people and using their words, keeping the quality of that to understand their experiences. And in so many ways, devising is a similar process.
Yeah.
It's like a discourse analysis in some ways of someone's life or a topic, and you are going through this information enough until you start to see patterns emerge.
Yeah.
The great thing about the devising process is you are so inherently, overtly in it that the things you attach to are the things that matter the most to you. So with Angela's life, there's lots of questions about her sexuality. There's lots of kind of, you know, hilarious relationships with silly men. So all of these things, you know, are things that we would pull on because they're related to our experiences in today.
Yeah. And the process, like creativity and academia and those processes, where do they collide for you?
For me, they're like completely intertwined, which probably in some ways makes me a pretty poor academic. No, that's not true, but a fun teacher.
Entertaining.
But entertaining. But I actually think that we need a lot more creativity in our academia.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think we need a little bit more academia in our art sometimes. I think it's okay to investigate, and I think we've stopped reading and we've stopped kind of asking questions about the world, and so the more that we can intertwine those, they're like perfect bedfellows.
Yeah.
But they've been treated as polar opposites.
Yeah, I feel like in Aotearoa we put people in boxes from a very young age, and it's like, here's your box and here's what you can do, and if you're a creative person, you're in one box, and if you're an academic, you know, book smart person, you're in a different box, totally. If you're a sporty person, and we find it really hard to kind of understand people as complex beings that have crossovers and aren't as straightforward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found that really hard even myself. You know, I always was like, should I be an academic? Should I be a creative?
Yeah.
And right pre-COVID, I'd said, that's it, I'm going to be a creative. And then I went to go see like a tarot reader because I was so confused about it. And she actually gave me the best advice, which was, in an academic space, you'll always be a creative. In a creative space, you'll always be an academic.
Yeah.
And it was kind of freeing to go, yeah, these two are never going to go away. They're intertwined. And so might as well just own it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the talk, what can people kind of expect? Do you have a structure?
I think it's going to be a little different. When I was asked to do it, I kind of gave them three topics I could do, ranging from, you know, my academic work all the way to this, which is a real melange of the two. And they actually picked this. They were like, this one sounds fun.
Oh, cool.
In that, I think it will probably be quite different from the other one. So I am going to do bits of the show, as well as kind of talking about analytically, how did we go about this? So it will be a mix of small segments of the show and kind of analytical discussion of who this woman was and how we incorporated her story into a one-hour comedy show. Very weird.
How long did it take to write the show and devise it?
Yeah, it takes us from the minute we think of the topic, well, I always say it takes as long as it needs, but we usually have registered for Fringe, so it has to be done by February. But I think it could take a lot longer. We're working on a show right now that's going to take about a year and a half, but that takes a solid year, I think, from idea generation to getting on the stage. And truthfully, if we did it again, like, the show doesn't end, it's like the next time you do it, you've reiterated it. So it's a long process.
Yeah, totally. Can you give our listeners a few fun facts about Angela?
I can give so many fun facts about Angela. She's amazing. She's so cool. Well, so first of all, she became the first Baroness kind of by chance.
Mm-hmm.
So she, it's real women supporting women. Her grandfather had like this very public affair with this very young woman called Harriet Mellon. And then when he died, he was like, fine, Harriet, you have all the money. And then she essentially was just like, I like Angela. And gave her all this wealth, which is unheard of that time. And she's like 16 and has become the richest woman in England overnight and is like, uh-oh. some cool things that she did with her money. So if anyone's been to Edinburgh, she actually put up Greyfriars Bobby, which is a statue of a dog, which is just funny. She put up a lot of, like, she loved animals, so she started, like, a club for goats, random. Aww. But then she also kind of was one of the co-founding members, in a sense, of the RSPCA.
Yeah.
And the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. So she's got this, like, wide-ranging portfolio. Yeah. And, like, my favourite fun fact about her is that she had this, like, best friend, Harriet, and they just were the closest people ever. And they, so they were just together all the time. There's lots of questions about, like, their sexuality and things like that. But, yeah.
Besties.
Besties for life. Best friends. Oh, my God, they had so much fun.
Yeah. To the point that they lived together. They loved
it. To the point that when she got married, when Hannah got married, she actually moved in with Angela and she had adjoining bedrooms with her. Her and her husband moved into her house. So fun.
Oh, wow. Just so fun. Just
girl things.
Yeah, just girl things. It's so funny. I guess you, when you're researching it, it's like gossip, you know, like you're reading really old gossip.
Totally. It's really interesting. I've had some people ask me when I've done versions of this talk, like, do you think there's an ethical question about, you know, questioning these things?
Mm.
And my response is always probably, like, to some degree, yes, but there's also an ethical question to not. Like, the assumption that these people had no interest outside of, like, heteronormative relationships, that's also an ethical bypass.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're very careful to say, like, we obviously don't know.
Yeah.
But, man, there are behaviours in there that if nowadays that happened, you'd be like, that's a beard. You are not interested in that man at all.
Your partner would have issues with how close you are with your best friend. Yeah. Be like, adjoining bedrooms, really? Like, do we need this?
Do we need this? 100%. So, yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the program. It was lovely to chat with you. Now, the talk is next Tuesday, the 30th. It is Umbrellos Kitchen and Bar. It's free and it kicks off at 5:30 p.m. You can find out more information from the Thirst for Knowledge Instagram page or Facebook page. Are there any final comments, thoughts, opinions?
Oh, just get amongst. It's going to be, I think, quite a different talk, and hopefully we can have some fun.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lily.
That was Maria Colombo, Doctor Maria Colombo, of psychology, talking about the upcoming Thirst for Knowledge on the creation of a stage production of the life of Victorian philanthropist Angela Burdett Coutts. I've fallen in love with Angela now, I feel like, and I'm sure everybody else has.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.